to be Monsanto's attorney. The person in charge of FDA policy was Monsanto's former outside attorney. Two other scientists who worked for Monsanto went into the FDA to help review Monsanto's bovine growth hormone. The head of the EPA went on Monsanto's board. The the head of the Secretary of Commerce went on Monsanto's board. Someone from Monsanto then became the number two person at the EPA.
The government watchdogs, the people who we rely on to look for our interest, have basically found them a spot there on their boards.
It's not. There's not real clear distinction between the government and biotechnology.
And I think that's true about other industries as well, too. But this is one of the most egregious and ones that have the biggest impact on us. We need to go on to take our break now. But I want you to tell our listeners again, since I'm sure they're just shocked and overwhelmed with this data, mention your books again, and where can they go on the way? We'll go in more detail at the end of the second hour, but quickly tell us a website where you can get your books.
Okay. There's two websites. There's seedsofdeception.com, and that's the name of one book, Seeds of Deception. And there's responsibletechnology.org, which is our nonprofit Institute for Responsible Technology. So seedsofdeception.com, responsibletechnology.org, and you can also call a toll-free number to order stuff, which is 888-717-7000, 888-717-7000. We also have a GMO trilogy, which is two DVDs and a CD. We have downloadable audios off our website and a free syndicated monthly column that goes out every month by email.
Yeah, it's one of the best organized websites I've seen. You guys are really on the ball, and I was really impressed with what I saw there. If you don't mind, I'll like to put that link up on up on our website, if that's okay.
That would be great. There's one other link that we can add, and that's don'tplantgmobeets.org. It goes to a different organization. You sign a single letter, and it goes to 63 different companies urging them to stop the introduction of genetically engineered sugar beets. So don'tplantgmobeets.org. People should go to that site and sign on that letter so we can stop GMO beets before they become contaminating in our food supply.
Okay. All right. Well, we're going to take our next break for Music for Meditation. And, when you talk about genetically modified foods, the first thing you think about, or the first person, obviously, is Richard Dawson, who was the British actor from Hogan's Heroes and host of Family Feud.
He was genetically modified?
Well, you'll find out. Well, back in the late 60s, all of these guys were doing their own psychedelic records. And I found one from Richard Dawson called Apples and Oranges. And this is another one that I could sort of find alluding to our topic tonight. Now, it has a surprise ending, a surprise dark ending. And I think you'll find out that his apples and oranges are indeed genetically modified when you hear the ending of this. So I hope you enjoy this, Mr. Smith.
Looking forward to it.
Give you a chance to get a little break, as well as our listeners, and let all of us digest what you shared with us. Again, excusing the pun. But we need to ponder what you just shared with us and get ready for the second hour, because we're going to cover a little bit more material and then get into what you can really help us with, which is how to protect ourselves and how to live in a GMO world and protect our families in the midst of it. So if you can hold tight, ladies and gentlemen, if you can enjoy our Music for Meditation, we'll be right back with the second hour of Future Quick.
Apples and oranges, apples and oranges, high in the tree, I'll pick some for me. Apples and oranges,
apples, oranges,
orange and red, hang high overhead. So high and so far, far away, far from the blood, so far from the gun and the dark red mud.
apples, oranges, apples, oranges. Reach high above and pick them.
This is Dr. Future back at the Future Quake Show on WRFN LP Pasco 98.9 FM in the greater Nashville area with my good friend Tom in studio.
I'm only eating road gravel from now on.
Oh, is that right?
At least I know what's in it.
And our friend Jeffrey Smith, author of the book Seeds of Deception. Jeffrey, you still there with us?
Yes, I am.
It sounds like you're standing on an airport runway. Have a little noise back there.
All right, let me change it. How about now?
Oh, that sounds great. Well, okay. A lot better. If you're uncomfortable, and it's not really that bothersome. I just happened to notice it. I didn't know if you were being chased by an airplane like North by Northwest.
No, I was just sending some emails to some people that had called in and wondering what they can do about spraying of BT toxin in New Jersey for gypsy moth infestation. So I was responding with some materials they could use to try and stop the dangerous spray. Anyway.
Well, it's very obvious to me you're an extremely important person, and on our show, we cover a lot of topics that are a fundamental concern in society. But when somebody's messing with our food supply, that's a pretty fundamental problem. I can tell you, you're not wasting your time in trying to warn and protect people. And I know in the second hour, you're going to give us some specifics on how we can protect ourselves. I don't know if you can get into their mind about this, and maybe there's not much to this. Can you shed any light on any other reasons why these GMO companies are pushing these products so aggressively? Obviously, unless they can pay off everybody, there's all sorts of liability issues. Are there any other reasons you know that you can tell why they're risking so much with these products?
Well, I've heard, if you control the food supply, the foods are the largest traded commodities in the world. They are huge. And if you control seeds, you control the food supply. And if you can, it's a huge financial opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
Now, one of the things that they want to do, I mean, the biotech industry has bought up a whole huge percentage of the world seed supply. Monsanto's the largest seed company in the world by far. They now have a situation where if you buy a genetically engineered seed, you sign a contract that you won't replant it the next season. You'll go back every year and buy seeds again each year. Now, what this does is, in some cases, it'll limit the biodiversity from farmers that would normally be developing seeds in their own area that are good for their own climate and geography. Mm-hmm. They then revert to the catalog seeds, and there's a lot fewer seeds. In fact, the companies are reducing the amount of availability of non-genetically engineered seeds to force farmers to take the GM varieties. Now they want to introduce a technology called Terminator technology.
Right. I was going to ask you, because I've read about that, about Monsanto in particular. Terminator seeds, yeah.
Yeah, those are seeds. They're not yet commercialized, but the technology's out there. That would the seeds would create plants which would create sterile seeds, so you couldn't replant them. And they're doing this because they want to target the 1.4 billion farmers in the developing world that save seeds, because they don't give any money to the biotech industry seed dealers. So what this could do, if they actually are successful, is they'll eliminate thousands and hundreds of thousands and millions of varieties of seeds and narrow the genetics from which the food supply is taken, which, of course, means that we're risking the world's food supply, because our safety is in our diversity.
So in other words, those greedy farmers in the third world making their $2 a day, they want to stop them making those outrageous profits.
We've got to get their money, that guy in Bangladesh who's feeding his family.
Now, in addition to owning the food supply, more and more, the percentage of the dollars that is being paid for food is not going to farmers. It's going to the middlemen. It's going to the big ag business. And so there's a lot of money to be made if you own the food chain from seed to plate. And that is the goal. And so it's not a small enterprise. I mean, it's a very big enterprise. It's like some of these same companies are going after the water supply, trying to own and resell the water.
Right. So, the whole world of the oil industry, we've made a big deal about energy. But one of the few industries, if you might say, that dwarfs the oil is the food, if you want to really look really, really big, as far as being able to control people. And once these Terminator seeds or GMO seeds proliferate, it's sort of game over at that point. If people are thinking about growing, and we're going to talk probably in the second half of this hour about what they can do, but if someone was thinking about starting their own garden as a last-ditch effort to make absolutely sure they're not getting GMO foods, is now the time they need to hurry up and buy their seeds? And are there places they can go reliably to get them?
The only commercialized vegetable crops are soy, corn, cotton, and canola, Hawaiian papaya, zucchini, and crookneck squash. So people don't plant cotton for their gardens. They don't plant canola for their gardens. They don't plant soybeans. So if they're not in Hawaii, they're not planting that, but a papaya. So for most gardeners, it comes down to sweet corn, zucchini, and crookneck squash that they have to be concerned about. And yes, they do have to be concerned about it. They must ask the seed dealer to guarantee that the seeds are not genetically engineered.
And do you have links to places where they can get that kind of material?
I will eventually, but now I don't. I would just suggest that go to your seed dealer. Organic seed dealers certainly have non-GM varieties, but when you go to your seed dealers, just have them put it in writing and then send it to you by email and then forward that to me so I can build a directory, because I do get asked that from time to time, and I haven't done it yet.
And now is the time to get that kind of stuff, I'm figuring, right? Before.
Well, I'm hoping that we can end the genetic engineering of the food supply within the next 2 years, and so hopefully it will not be intensive, urgent. Yeah, I've got a plan, and I'll talk
right
about
on. It. Right on. As a guy who has a garden, can I trust the labels that say organic stamped right on the front of the little seed packet? Or?
Yes, organics. Especially, remember, you're only concerned about those three, sweet corn, zucchini, and crookneck squash.
Okay.
Now, they might cross-pollinate, in theory, so there might be a genetically engineered seed in there, but it's possible. It's more likely in the corn than in the zucchini or crookneck squash, because there's so much corn out there, the pollen spreads so far, that you'll find that certain corn... some organic corns, when they're in the crop stage, not the seed stage, but in the crop stage, have tiny percentages. There might be some small percentage of the corn seed that you're buying.
Okay.
Well, I guess you've alluded this a little bit. I wanted to ask you about what's the end game and what you think's going to play out. You have a plan, and you mean to win. It's very obvious. To eradicate these. If for whatever reason you were not successful in eradicating them, and these other folk win, and they proliferate them as they desire, what do you think is, what's the world going to be like in your best projection if you don't win this battle?
Well, I see around the world there's really two worlds superimposed on one. There's a world of corporate dictated power and commodification of our lives, and then there's a whole like an immune system response to that, where NGOs, non-governmental organizations, are coming up literally by the millions. There are over a million. There's actually several million of these organizations, and many of them are focusing on food and the food supply, organic and sustainable and beyond organic and local. So it is a direct reaction to the very dangerous industrialization of our food supply. And so if we are not able to end the genetic engineering of the food supply, which is our plan, then there still will be a viable choice for people in non-GM products, because there's literally millions of farmers and millions of people that are dedicated to that.
But would you have to grow them in greenhouses? Because the pollen from the other GMO stuff, I'm sure it's going to be airborne and mixed with other places and things like that, right?
You can grow them in isolation, away from other species. Depending, you have to be careful. I mean, there's not a lot of corn grown in California, so you can take plots in California to grow seeds for non-GM corn. Soybeans don't cross-pollinate; they self-pollinate. But human error and when they get stored or transported, can mix up in that case, and so you still end up with contamination. Over the long term, nature has ways of contaminating. I mean, consider Hawaii. It was once pure lava rock. It's now a lush tropical paradise more than 2,000 miles away from the mainland. Where did it get those seeds? Nature figures out a way to spread her bounty. And so over the long term, mixing and contamination will occur.
Okay. All right. I could see with the proliferation of these Terminator seeds that it even becomes another form of warfare. That if there are nations that are not being cooperative other nations, they can just simply embargo replacement seeds and can create a famine in people who aren't compliant.
Yeah, I mean, as a warfare, I mean, there's bioweapons. You could use genetically engineered blights to destroy a food supply. In fact, there was a near catastrophe in the United States. There was a genetically engineered bacteria created to convert crop waste into alcohol, and it created a residue, and they planned to use that residue as fertilizer and sell it and have it spread out on fields all over the Midwest. And a graduate student said, well, why don't we test this residue before we sell it and spread it out? And they said, no, we've already tested it on this particular thing. She said, I don't think that was a real-life condition. We should really test it. And she insisted, and they did it. And it turns out they planted wheat, and it grew about 2 inches and then died because the roots had turned to alcohol. And so she ended up stopping this.
Wow.
And if she hadn't, she was convinced that it could have actually spread out and rendered large areas infertile. There's another near miss, and there was a variety of bacteria that was going to be introduced. It was introduced in a field trial, but then incinerated. And it was to allow strawberries to survive in frost. And the theory went like this, that there's a certain bacteria called Pseudomonas syringii, where they look like little syringes with points at the end. And those points are designed to condense water from water vapor.
Mm-hmm.
And so the Pseudomonas syringii would be on the outside of all sorts of plant life and trees and whatnot, and it would cause the condensation of water, which in cold weather would become frost and kill the plant. So they genetically engineered the bacteria to have a blunt syringe that would not condense the water, and so they put it on there, but then some activists realized that there's a pigweed that also dies during the spring, and if they had this kind of thing spread, then the pigweed wouldn't die, and so it would cause a huge pest, and so they were forced to incinerate. But what they didn't realize is that the Pseudomonas syringii becomes airborne when the wind comes in off the west coast and hits the trees, causing increased pressure, which causes increased heat, which pushes these syringii up into the air, according to some theories, and that it actually condenses the water vapor that comes in off of the Pacific Ocean, which causes the rainfall. So if this bacteria had gotten out and had proliferated up and down the coast of California where it was actually sprayed in this field trial, it could have inalterably altered the world's climate and weather.
This is like a bad movie or something.
Science fiction.
Yeah, because
that's, I mean, you're the expert. I'm not in this, but one of the problems with biological materials, it's a lot of hard, it's much harder to get the toothpaste back in the tube, so to speak, when things start reproducing.
Imagine being hired by a company that says to you, well, we had a little problem, and we wanted to hire you to recall our salmon from the ocean. Recall our genetically modified mosquitoes.
Right.
You know, there are companies that are making genetically modified salmon and mosquitoes.
Yeah, I've heard that.
They are.
And so if they see something bad in their testing down the road, it's like, well, oh, shoot.
Oops.
Yeah.
Oops. A big oops.
What rights do citizens lawfully have to protect their rights regarding the food supply and to expect truthful disclosure in product contents and research reporting? What right today? What kind of rights do we have and have a right to expect?
Well, let me see. There's one battle going on that's related to that question. Monsanto's genetically engineered bovine growth hormone, there's no required labels if a company uses this RBGH. But when companies were putting on their cartons that it was RBGH-free or no artificial hormones, Monsanto sued some companies saying that that should be illegal. Now, more recently, they tried to get the FDA and FTC to make it illegal by law, and they failed there, so they're going after state governments, asking them to make it illegal for dairies to label their products as RBGH-free. And they've gotten some winners there. They've actually gotten some companies, some states like Pennsylvania and Ohio, to require that if any company wants to label their product as RBGH-free, that they include a disclaimer saying that, according to the FDA, there's no difference in milk from treated cows. Now, that statement was written by Michael Taylor, Monsanto's former attorney, who became in charge of FDA policy, who wrote it in a white paper as a suggestion. It was never a requirement, but somehow Monsanto and friends have gotten these state governments to require dairies to list this sentence, which is actually completely false. It is 100% false, and yet it is now required by law recently in Pennsylvania and Ohio, and maybe soon in some other states. So that's one area in terms of what our rights are.
Don't citizens have some right of recourse against their government when armed with this information?
In theory. The FDA was told by the White House to promote biotechnology, so they didn't require labels on genetically engineered foods. And so they know that 9 out of 10 Americans want GM food labeled, and they refuse the desire of 9 out of 10 Americans to support the economic interests of 5 biotech companies that create the GM foods.
Wow.
Fundamentally,
a government agency should not be coerced to promote anything. The fundamental nature of a government agency is to be a watchdog for the public and not to try to be some kind of chamber of commerce. So, I mean, when you hear this promotion, it's synonymous for saying somebody's palm got greased. I have a little more experience in the aviation industry. And FAA's, as I understand it, one of their main mission was to promote air travel. And they recognized that this mission to promote air travel was inconsistent with their mission to be a safekeeper of aircraft safety and air travel safety. And so they've had this process they're going through, and how do they split off a separate group who's still doing this promotion business, which I'd say they should never even be involved with. It's actually obsolete right now. And the whole concept of looking out for the well-being of the public. So this whole promotion thing, I mean, I certainly understand it, and I would expect it in certain instances. But citizens should be furious that our government is trying to promote anything like that.
You know, Lester Crawford used to be the commissioner of the FDA. I think he went to jail or got indicted or something. But before that, he was he was commissioner. And when he was still acting commissioner, he gave a talk to the dairy industry, and a friend of mine was there, and he said that according to the PowerPoint that he gave, the goals of the FDA were, one, to protect the food and drug supply, and two, to promote biotechnology. And in my book, Genetic Roulette, when I talk about the inadequacies of the current government regulations around the world, one section shows exactly what you're talking about, that promotion and regulation do not mix.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, if anybody gets hold of a government document that has the word promote in it, that means follow the money. And there's some corruption somewhere, I would say, in most cases when that word promote pops up. Is there any other recourse that we have? As I know, if there's anything that could be done, you're probably doing it right now.
Well, there certainly are recourse. I mean, there was a group called Center for Food Safety and some others sued the USDA for allowing genetically modified alfalfa to be planted, and that the federal judge prevented any further sales. So there's some alfalfa out there because one season's worth got sold, but the follow-up has been stopped because there hadn't been a following of the environmental rules, environmental mm-hmm. protection. And so that's one thing. There's a story of Percy Schmeisser, who his genetically engineered canola from passing trucks and from neighbors' fields contaminated his fields of non-genetically engineered canola. And then Monsanto sued Percy Schmeisser because he had their intellectual property, patented seeds, growing on his field.
You've got to be kidding me.
No, I'm not kidding you. And it went to the Canadian Supreme Court, and Percy Schmeisser was told by the Canadian Supreme Court that, yes, because Monsanto's seeds blew onto his property, and he ended up harvesting it in the same machine that he uses to harvest his own, and was replanted, violated Monsanto's patent rights, and therefore if he had any plants left over from his entire field or seeds, they had to be turned over to Monsanto. Now, what happened was, throughout that trial, Monsanto kept saying, oh, if farmers get contaminated, then they simply have to call us and we'll remove those plants. So, lo and behold, after the court case from the Supreme Court, a year later, Percy got recontaminated by passing trucks, and he called Monsanto, who came over and looked at it, and they said, okay, we'll take care of it, and they went home, and they sent him a contract to sign first. And the contract was going to eliminate the possibility that he could ever sue Monsanto again for any reason, and that he would not be able to speak about the settlement ever again. So it was a gag order, and they're taking away his rights to sue. So he refused to sign it, and then sued Monsanto. Then he hired someone for $600 to clear the field and to throw away the canola. He then sued Monsanto, $660. He sued Monsanto for $660, and the day before they went to court, which was March 19th, on March 18th, they settled, and Monsanto wrote him a check for $660 and did not require him to sign the gag order. So that set a precedent, which was good news, although Percy Schmeisser lost hundreds of thousands in his court case. He won $660 back from Monsanto, setting a precedent
because
for farmers around the world.
He had to outthink the mafia, basically, who wanted protection money. But, you know, I think he should have actually sued him for dumping hazardous waste on his property.
Well, he actually could continue. There's different recourses that can happen legally. There's another case which was another legal battle, which was interesting, totally different. Monsanto's bovine growth hormone was going to be exposed in a four-part news series on Fox TV in Tampa in 1997. And 3 days before it was to air, a threatening letter from Monsanto's attorney to Fox headquarters stopped the show. They had it vetted, and it turns out that it was completely backed up by documented evidence. It linked it to cancer. It linked it to all other things. So they rescheduled it. A second letter from Monsanto's attorney arrived, this time promising dire consequences to Fox Television and its owner, Rupert Murdoch. And that, and then, the, according to the two reporters, the investigative reporters, they were offered hush money to go away, to just go away and never do the story and talk about the story again. They refused. So they led in a series of rewrites. Over 6 months or more, 83 rewrites, each time making it softer and softer for Monsanto. Finally, they were told to state that there's no difference in the milk from cows treated with RBGH, which was a lie, and they said, we're not going to lie on television, and they were fired. So they sued Fox TV under Florida whistleblower laws because the whistleblower laws protect employees who were fired for threatening or for actually telling the FCC about a violation of the law. So they were threatening to tell the FCC that they were being told to lie on television. Fox, the jury awarded $425,000 to one of the reporters, saying that, yes, she was fired because of that reason. But then Fox appealed and won because it turns out it's not illegal to lie on television. So the Florida whistleblower laws didn't cover them.
I guess if it was illegal to lie on TV, they'd fill all our prisons with media officials, excluding present company, of course, right, Tom?
Yes, of course.
Yeah, never.
Well, I've got one last question before our break, because I want to focus on our last segment on what we can do as individuals, and I know you have something to share with us about that. But let me ask you what you recommend. Of course, you want to just eradicate these, but in the meantime, during the eradication, is there anything that you can succinctly say should be done by our government until that eradication is complete, that they need to do at least to test these products in a better way to better protect the population? I mean, you may believe that there's absolutely no way to handle them safely, but is there anything as a stopgap while you stop their production that could be done?
Well, they should be labeled. They should go through at least the protocols used for food additives and for drugs as well. But you see, they have more complications than just drugs, and you mentioned this earlier. They're living organisms, and there's things that can go wrong. I'll give you one example. The gene that you insert into the DNA, the transgene, has a code in it which codes for the protein. Now, they looked at the actual transgenes in six popular GM varieties in Europe, and it turns out the sequence in every case was different than that which was registered by the company, suggesting that the sequences rearrange over time and are not stable, which means they might be producing proteins that were never intended and never tested. If that's the case, how could you do a risk assessment? Because you test a protein one day, and then the next season it's completely different. So there are reasons why I believe that we don't have the technology to understand what can go wrong and to evaluate what can go wrong. But at the very least, it should have been evaluated like a food additive and a drug.
Well, I would even think, too, things that actually do genetic modifications like this could actually be multi-generational in their effect, and possibly maybe they would even pop up until the second or third generation after the consumer.
There's a new information about something called epigenetics, where you feed RNA to, or even certain vitamins and minerals to pregnant mice, and you change the gene expression of the offspring and the offspring's offspring. So, yes, we're talking about multi-generational effects. In some cases, you can feed RNA to an organism and silence genes throughout that organism, throughout the body, and also in the offspring. Mm-hmm. And RNA was supposed to be completely uninheritable, and the genetically engineered crops are creating all sorts of new RNA. So, you know, we're really playing with fire. We have very little knowledge. It's like infant knowledge about this stuff, and yet we're making massive manipulation.
And those are just all sorts of dimensions that, as you imply, they're just not equipped to handle. You know, I always heard that twins ran like in every other generation. I don't know if that's true or not, but if that is true, traits like that are induced would be just almost near impossible to catch, you know, any reasonable time if you were going to try to promote a product.
Yeah, I know. It's you mentioned in the beginning genetic time bomb, and you know we're talking about an entire generation now that was born and fed genetically engineered soy milk formula and genetically engineered corn, you know, when they were kids, and eating high fructose corn syrup and genetically engineered aspartame, the sweetener. So we have really put our generation at risk here.
We might have a whole new thalidomide generation.
Yes.
Well, we've got time for our last break, and then I want to come back and try to focus on a little bit of positive, and you can give us a little light at the end of the tunnel.
Absolutely. There's a lot of light there.
What we can do.
Good. I need some.
We're going to take our last break. This is a little bit more serious song, and this was a song I found from a gentleman back in 1969, Michael Sedgwick, who was known as the Singing Farmer. And this song called Such Lovely Things is a song that rejoices in the good things of the earth and of nature and the kind of things that may quickly disappear if we don't put a stop. This is a little bit change in the kind of music we normally have here, but I think you'll enjoy it and maybe give us a little bit of serenity to get us ready for our last segment of the show. So, again, I hope you enjoy this, ladies and gentlemen. Enjoy our music for meditation, and we'll be right back with our last segment of Future Quick.
Such lovely things are yours and mine forever. The peaceful stream, the murmur of the sea, the far off hills that glow with purple heather. Such lovely things God made for you and me. The lark in flight upon an April morning, the rolling downs, the sweet scented glory of the dawning, all these and more were made for us to share. Such lovely things are yours and mine to cherish. A field of corn, a weeping willow tree, sweet vales and hills whose beauty ne'er shall perish. Such lovely things will surely ever be.
This is Dr. Future, back to the Future Quake show with Tom and our guest Jeffrey Smith.
Yeah.
In our last segment of our show, talking about the biological time bomb and our food supply. And I want to come back in our last segment here, Mr. Smith, and try to give us a little bit of hope about what we can do. And let me just ask you directly, how can we as individuals currently protect ourselves from these type products?
Well, we can take a lesson from animals. Animals, so many different varieties of animals, when given a choice between GM and non-GM, will choose the non-GM varieties. And this is pigs, cows, geese, elk, squirrels, deer, raccoons, mice, and rats. All seem to be choosing the non-GM varieties when given a choice. So
they have better sense than we do, in other words.
We have to get up to ourselves up to the level of animals, exactly. There's three ways to avoid eating genetically engineered foods. Let's call it four ways to avoid eating genetically engineered foods. One is to buy organic. The other is to buy products which say non-GMO on the label. The third is to buy products that are listed on a non-GMO shopping guide, and you can go to our website to find non-GMO shopping guides.
I'm going to do that right now.
Seedsofdeception.com or responsibletechnology.org. And the fourth is to memorize the at-risk ingredients. If you go to responsibletechnology.org, we have a Tips to Avoid Genetically Engineered Foods new brochure, which you can read online or download. And on the last page of the four pages, it lists a lot of these derivatives of soy and corn, which if you get to know, you bring that to your shopping center, then you can figure out which products to, which brands to avoid because they don't have the soy or corn derivatives. So now, ideally, you could buy organic, but not everyone has access to organic. So let's say you're at a typical conventional supermarket, and you want to buy a tomato sauce, and you find Ragu tomato sauce. I went recently and looked at the sources of Ragu, and the Ragu Chunky has high fructose corn syrup and soybean oil. The Ragu Light has olive oil. So within the same brand, you have two different varieties, one that's non-genetically engineered because it doesn't have the soy, corn, cotton, or canola, and one that is genetically engineered because it has both soybeans and corn. So you'll learn to switch your brands, and that's one thing that we can do individually.
May be way out in left field, but could that have any kind of relationship to why now suddenly people are finding the Mediterranean diet has all sorts of health benefits and longevity?
I don't think so, because the thing is the longevity issue was not just in the last 10 years.
Yeah, but what I'm saying, I mean, I know they've had good health for a long, long period of time, whether it's GMOs or not, but could the fact that we now have issued GMOs in the last generation actually widen the gulf between people that are in that diet and people that aren't?
Oh, absolutely it could, absolutely. I mean, it's possible that a lot of these problems like obesity, diabetes, and autism and migraines and all that are on the rise because of GMOs. I mean, food-related illnesses in the United States doubled between 1994 and 2001.
See, now, are you sponsored by the Olive Oil Growers Association?
No, yeah. But I send a lot of people to olive oil.
Yeah, because coconut oil, you recommend?
Yeah, that's
coconut
really good
oil.
For you.
There's a lot of different oils. Yeah, yeah. I can't speak as an expert on nutrition. I actually know a great deal about it, but I'm not an expert. I haven't spent the dozen years studying it like I have with genetic engineering. So I don't tend to recommend specific things, but I do recommend what to avoid.
Well, you know, I noticed that Gilligan never aged during that show, so coconut oil, there might be something to that.
Well, I can recommend as an expert on taste. And coconut oil is quite good, actually. It gives a very light flavor to most of what you fry with.
Even the headhunters. The headhunters looked really healthy, too.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Now, what about going out to restaurants and things like that? Any Jack in the Box, if I'm there, or something like that?
So the deal is that most processed foods contain GMOs, and most restaurants cook in vegetable oil, and the vegetable oil is probably soy, corn, cotton, or canola oil. So what you got to do is, first of all, if you go to fast foods that buy their bulk foods pre-cooked and processed, you're not going to get non-GM stuff.
Sure.
But if you go to restaurants that cook from scratch, then the key question is what kind of oil do they use? If they say vegetable oil, say, well, do you have pure olive oil, or can you cook mine in butter, or do you have any other types of oil, or no oil? And if I go to a Thai restaurant, I know that many of the curries are cooked in coconut milk.
Mm-hmm.
And if I go to Italian or Greek, that's cooked in olive oil.
Sure.
If I go to Mediterranean, also the Middle Eastern. If I go to Chinese or Japanese or Mexican, it's very difficult because it's often cooked in vegetable oil. And if they happen to cook in one of the soy, corn, cotton, or canola, they usually cook everything in that.
What about fajitas?
Fajitas. Well, it depends. I mean, if you use any of the corn products in a Mexican restaurant, that it's going to be genetically engineered. Now, of corn, the blue corn is not GMO, the white corn is not GMO, the popcorn is not GMO, it's the yellow corn.
So what about your typical nacho chips? Are they
GMO.
There it is, GMO.
GMO.
GMO, yeah.
Mm,
now,
you're up a creek there,
yeah.
Dr. Future.
Yeah. Now, you can buy the organic. There's a bunch of...
Yeah.
There's a
the
bunch
blue corn.
Of
have you tried blue corn chips, Dr. Future?
Yes, I have.
They're good. They're,
yes.
You
they're
could,
good.
You should switch.
Yeah.
And
just...
even red. Even red corn, too.
Oh, those are good, too. Yeah.
Now, so when you go out to eat in restaurants, besides the oils, the other GM at-risk ingredients are typically visible, where you can know if you can avoid them. For instance, corn chips. For instance, corn. For instance, polenta. Mm-hmm. So the corns are going to be noticeable. For soy, you're going to notice the soy sauce or tofu that's associated with soybeans. And you're not going to stir fry canola or cotton. So basically, if you're cooking from scratch and you avoid the vegetable oil, you'll be able to identify the other stuff. Unless they are like using a sweet and sour sauce or a barbecue sauce or a mm-hmm. mayonnaise, those will have genetically engineered ingredients.
Okay. Now, can you go get your own organic corn chips, for example, and can you find non-GMO?
Of course,
corn
yes.
chips or you know.
Yeah, you definitely can.
Okay.
You definitely can.
Not
in fact, there might be some small amounts of contamination because of the nature of nature, but you can definitely find it, and that's the only style that I eat.
Okay. All right. Have you found it's dramatically cramped your style on being able to eat by going non-GMO?
Well, I travel with food. I always got little food bars or some packet of food with me because, like, I travel a lot. I'm in airports all the time, and I figured out certain airports, there's certain places I can eat and a lot of places that I can't if I'm going to avoid GMOs. So cramping style is there, but on the other hand, there's just certain things I don't consider edible.
But you'd like to live, too.
Yeah, absolutely. What, I love going to Europe because there I can eat anything because they don't use genetically engineered foods because they have to be labeled, and no one wants to label them. It's because it's like the skull and crossbones. They'll lose sales.
I mean, that's a fundamental thing. If anybody tries to restrict disclosure to the public, that's a red flag right there that somebody's up to no good.
Absolutely.
That should be a no-brainer. Hey, by the way, what's in your... I don't mean to ask you a personal question, but what's in your food bag that you take with you?
Oh, I usually have food bars. I have a large variety of, the food bars you can just take. And I've got nuts, and I've got dried fruit, and... I might have chips. I might have dips for the chips. Different things, depending on where I'm traveling from and where I'm traveling to. I do a lot of talks in health food shows, in which case I walk out with a lot of free samples, and then I also go to medical conferences. And when I travel in different parts of the world, though, it's easy. It's easier than the United States.
Do you have any kind of favorite restaurants or other kind of places that you know that you're going to have a lot of choices?
Well, I interview the restaurateurs a lot. I was happy to hear Wolfgang Puck's in a particular airport that I went to. When they make the pizza dough, they only use the olive oil instead of the vegetable oil in their pizza dough, or no oil. So, because I mean, if I'm going to get really restrictive, I don't want to eat a pizza if they've used a teaspoon of olive vegetable oil in the dough. But fortunately, they didn't, and it's great. So I get to know the details.
Yeah.
I was just in a restaurant over the weekend, and the chef came out, and he was very excited and very happy when he found out that I was an expert in GMOs. And he told me the story about everything that he cooked. He said, "I refused to cook it with canola. It's just olive oil here, and my boss wanted me to cook with canola, and I refused. And now that I know it's genetically engineered, I'm so much happier that I refused." Anyway, so it's fun. I get to sort of convert the world one chef at a time as I'm traveling. But I want to share with you the really good news, because we're getting close to the end, and I think that people deserve to have this big exhale.
Give us a light at the end of the tunnel, yeah.
Yeah, so here's the exhale, okay. Now, I want to tell you a story, what happened in Europe in 1999. This scientist who had been fired from his job after 35 years and silenced with threats of a lawsuit, we talked about him already. On February 16th, his gag order was lifted, and he was finally able to speak to the press about how he had been treated, how some calls from the UK Prime Minister's office had ultimately caused him to be fired from his job, apparently. So 750 articles were written within the month, and headlines around Europe were describing how genetically engineered foods may be unsafe. And that was the tipping point.
That's awesome.
Where food companies realized that using genetically engineered foods and ingredients was now a liability for sales. And so in April of 1999, last week, of April, Unilever, Britain's largest food manufacturer, publicly committed to remove all GM ingredients from their European brands, and by the end of the week, so did virtually every other food company in Europe for their European brands.
Once it hits a tipping point, it's sort of like the fall of the Berlin Wall.
Exactly.
It all comes crumbling down quickly.
So now in the United States, our organization, the Institute for Responsible Technology, is one of several which has been educating consumers on the health risks of bovine growth hormone, and we've seen a tipping point achieved starting beginning of, say, 2 years ago. Since then, about 40 of the top 100 dairies have stopped using this genetically engineered drug called or crack for cows, and they're starting to label their products as RVGH-free. That's why Monsanto is scrambling to try and get that label illegalized in various states. But that we've seen a tipping point that can happen in the United States based on consumer education and consumer choice. So I personally believe that if we had even 5% of U.S. consumers consciously avoiding GM ingredients, that's 15 million people, 5.6 million households, we can easily hit the tipping point at less than that.
So now, you put an economic squeeze. In other words, just sort of have a boycott of food that's not GM, even if it's organized or unorganized.
Right. So now, how do you do that? Well, wherever I speak around the country, I ask my audience to rate themselves how vigilant they've been in the past week at avoiding bringing genetically engineered foods into their home. And like I was talking at a doctor's conference in the summer, and there was most people were, say, 0 to 20, very low level of vigilance. And I spoke to them for 30 minutes, and before I finished, I said, now rate yourself, having heard the thousands of sick, sterile, and dead livestock, the thousands of toxic and allergic reactions in humans, and the damage to virtually every organ and system in lab animals that have been studied. Rate yourself how vigilant you'll be next week at avoiding bringing genetically engineered ingredients into your home. 0 to 20, no hands. 20 to 40, 40 to 60, no hands. One hand went up from 60 to 80, and everyone else rated themselves 80 to 100 levels of vigilance from that moment on. So we know even doctors, which are usually a hard sell, mothers, scientists, food service directors. I've talked to such varieties of people in every single auditorium I go to, virtually everyone has increased their vigilance to avoid eating genetically engineered food. So it's just a matter of conveying this information to a few million people and giving them choices. And so what we've done is we've divided the world into four demographic groups. There's health-conscious shoppers, which are served by the natural food industry and the health-conscious press. There's parents in schools. There's healthcare practitioners. And there's religious groups. Any one of those four groups is certainly large enough to drive GMOs out of the market. We're going after all four, and we're delivering packages of information far and wide, and in the summer we're going to distribute non-GMO shopping guides in all the health food stores for free. It'll be inserted as part of magazine center spreads. It'll be distributed through email and all that, and we're going to help drive all the remaining GMOs out of the natural food industry, and that's already happening starting this year. Very good news. We've got doctors' groups that are going to be distributing our information to hundreds of thousands of physicians and other healthcare practitioners. So we welcome the support of your listeners. We welcome financial support. We welcome distribution support. We have audio CDs people can download onto their iPods or make CDs and get for free off our site. You can buy them for $1.20 and buy 1,000 of them and give them away. You can buy books and put them on give them to your most important friends that that have the biggest influence. We've got a DVD called Hidden Dangers in Kids' Meals. It's like instant activism. You just add DVD and stir. You just ask them.
Hey, let me ask you a question. If somebody went down to their local supermarket,
talked to the head and said, "Hey, if you put a spot in the store for non-GMO foods that we know and carry maybe these brands that we have."
Problem with the sound?
Well, what's going to happen is this.
I'm sorry, we had a little problem with the article here. If they go to their supermarket and actually say, if you'll put a non-GMO section in your store, we will send our community newspaper down, and you'll be recognized for that, and we'll do a big expose on how you're a good public citizen, maybe even have somebody like your organization come send a a notice of commendation or something like that. Is that a way we can have an impact in our local community?
There's some problems with that. Certainly, if they're willing to do that, it would be work. But the problem is that some managers of traditional conventional stores might be reticent to point out that the products that are not in that section are genetically engineered.
Mm-hmm.
So they may not want to scare away customers. So our philosophy is a little bit different. First of all, we're converting the entire natural food industry. We're going to set up GMO education centers at all the health food stores. We're going to distribute non-GMO shopping guides in all the health food stores.
Mm-hmm.
But we're also going to encourage the chains, these supermarket chains, to take GMOs out of their own brands. So the Safeways and the Walmarts, etc., for their own brands will become non-GM.
Oh, yeah.
And when that's converted, then they're going to want to tell people,
right,
because then they're actually going to have a bigger margin when their own products are sold.
Right, and they have a real marketing advantage over the name brand products.
Precisely.
Would letters from my listeners to these grocers to support that movement be of help to you as well?
Letters would be great. I think that one of the best things that local activists can do is to get in touch with us to set up a GM-free school campaign. Even if you don't have kids in the school,
okay,
everyone likes to rally around protecting kids who are most at risk from GM foods.
Mm-hmm.
We have this video, Hidden Dangers in Kids' Meals. We have an audio that you can make copies of for free. We have a 60-page manual how to organize pre-digested stuff, letters, articles that are already mm-hmm. pre-written that you can customize to give to your local paper. Little notices you can send out to get, people to come to your house to watch this video, and then they mm-hmm. can take video copies and maybe show other people. It's pretty easy. So that's one thing.
Okay.
The other thing is, if there are healthcare practitioners, they should get in touch with us to get patient education materials. If they're a religious organization, they can distribute our information as well. A lot of religious people believe that GMO really means God move over, and they don't want to have anything to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
We also recommend that, we're going to be putting on our website later on what you can do to hand out to restaurants so that they can learn more about it.
Mm-hmm.
And we also, at this point, frankly, we actually need money,
okay,
believe it or not. We have like 3 or 4 unfunded staff positions that we just haven't been able mm-hmm. to get to because we haven't had enough money to support them. So that's something. We have a membership where for $25 you get a free 2 DVDs and a CD. It's called the GMO
okay.
Trilogy. And all this other stuff. So we just visit our website at responsibletechnology.org, camp out there for a while, and realize there's a whole world of things that we could all do together.
We, it's just refreshing to hear somebody who not only can tell us the bad news, but actually has a plan and are making the plan work. It's very encouraging for us, and I want to encourage all my listeners to get involved. Somebody's already got the plan together. They've organized it. They've put the hard work. All we have to do is get behind them. And we'll also have your links on our website at futurequake.com, and we'll have the show archived so they can send their friends to listen to the show. It'll be up there permanently. They can actually listen to futurequake.com and study this in detail we've talked about tonight. We have about 1 minute left. Can you give us your websites again and the names of your 2 books?
Sure.
And then we're going to have to say goodnight.
Sure. Seeds of Deception at seedsofdeception.com, Genetic Roulette, also at seedsofdeception.com, and responsibletechnology.org. And you can also call 888-717-7000 to order books, DVDs, CDs, etc., and brochures.
Mr. Smith, thank you so much for a fantastic show. And I don't know how people could get more information packed into 2 hours than what you've given to us tonight. Tom, do you have anything to add in closing here?
Well, I appreciate the opportunity to let your listeners know. I believe we're going to end the genetic engineering of the food supply before the end of 2009 by hitting the tipping point, and then it's just a
wow.
matter of cleaning it up.
Yeah. Boy, that was an amazing amount of information and packed oh so tightly, but yet oh so well and succinctly. It was great.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. And by the way, Tom and I have a tremendous pull with the Nobel Committee, so we'll be putting your name in if you can get this pulled off of 2009, okay?
Great.
Hey,
okay.
Thank you so much, and you have a good evening. And please don't be a stranger. Please come back and update us in the future.
Thank you.
Okay,
thank
have a good evening.
Take care.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, that's Mr. Jeffrey Smith with a fantastic show. Any 10-second comments you got, Tom, on your thoughts on our guest?
I'm glad I heard that.
Man, you left me a few seconds left over. Well, we've got to say goodbye. We've got Canine Cole and Hot Rods and Heels coming up here within a minute. So we're going to say goodnight. We'll have a great show, live show again next Tuesday night. Until then, I hope your future is very bright. Have a good evening.
Join us next week as we dare to experience another aftershock of a future quake.
There are new trees crowding out old realities. There's revolution sweeping like a fresh new breeze.